call to order the June meeting of the Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we've got two meeting minutes to approve. So let's go ahead and look at the April ones first.
No, I've had the ones.
Oh, here.
This is the gates of the meeting we're here for.
Oh, okay. Is there a motion to approve the April 4th, 2018 minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next one would be the May 2nd meeting minutes, which is a non-meeting. But I assume we have to approve that.
Yeah.
So, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Public comments. Anybody here? That's the great thing about P&Z versus town council. We never have public comments.
Don't count your chickens.
Don't ever say never.
All right. Number five, old business. Recommendation to council to approve consistency statement. What do we have? Do we have actually have a consistency statement?
Yeah, it is attached. Okay.
All right. And that has not been signed yet, right?
Correct.
Okay.
It wasn't in front of you in the last meeting.
Right.
Staff is recommending that we do that so that council has a good sense of direction as they consider and act on it.
Okay. Now, this is based upon John's presentation that one night, or was that about two, where we...
Laborious
presentation. Okay.
It's actually required as part of the process.
Okay. If I remember, my major issue was on the points. Is that kind of you recommend?
You have a little bit of an update there.
Okay.
We did not take out as many things as I was initially thinking we would.
Okay.
The main reason for that was we've got a significant area that is under our extraterritorial jurisdiction that we cannot do any enforcement in anyway. So we left a lot of the things in there that are actually going to help us.
Okay.
Most likely we're going to be going down on class.
Okay.
And our CIF grade. But they do not have just a spreadsheet that you can go through and add up all the points and things. That, I did a lot of research and tried to find out exactly what we were looking at. Really couldn't find anything, so what I can tell you is we are gaining points, we're not losing points compared to what we had in last year.
But it's odd since they have point values for a number, not everything in there, but for some of them, that then they, as you said, they don't have a spreadsheet by which you can punch in what you're doing and see what's going to happen, you know, with all these points. So they're adding points, but, you know, so what? So, okay. Is there any discussion about the consistency statement? So the recommendation, at least in the consistency statement, is that it is consistent with the various aspects of the
land use plan,
yes.
Actually, the sited provision actually references the that particular ordinance in an earlier version.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the consistency statement?
So moved.
Seconds?
Second.
Any further discussion on the motion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. New business. First one is discussion. We have a lot of discussions here in terms of the number of issues. Looks like we're going to have a pretty full calendar for the next couple months here. Discussion of possible ordinance regarding propane tanks on the ocean side. So... who would like to discuss? That's you, so you want to...
kind of narrow it down. For
yeah.
This was one of my agenda items for last month, which didn't happen. I'll just share this with some pictures that we took from...
I think we
propane.
Are
you still on?
Yeah,
we have
them.
Okay.
Yeah.
From what happened is the fire department came down at my request, and we walked the propane tanks that are on the ocean side basically for those people that wanted a fireplace that's propane or even heat their gas stoves or whatever else with it. And we found four or five of them, and a couple of them were in horrible shape, which is some of those pictures on. Initially, when we did this, I went back to Ocean Dunes and we revised our answers and what we require. And what we require now is that, because it only says that the state, by the way, this all falls under the county, not John at all, because it's mechanical. So this is something strictly between the county and the servicer. The requirement is basically that they put in some sort of a leveled platform. It could be cinder block. Now, we found out with one of the pictures that we had that the cinder block can be eroded, so we recommended that it go be at least 2 feet. In addition to that, at Ocean Dunes, and you know, it's not required, but at Ocean Dunes, we're asking it to be kind of blocked in with non-fire material to just kind of hide it. It's got to be 9 inches off the ground, so that it would allow the heavy propane to get out and open on the top. But I was just bringing this to your attention to see if the town wants to look to take a look at anything we might want to further do with it. When I checked with some of the people, it turns out the way this works is that whoever services your propane tank is responsible to check it, and if it becomes unserviceable, other than surface rust, because we're always going to have surface rust, then they have to replace it. But Ocean Dunes, what we did is we simply we required that in October of every year that you get a certification to the board that that has in fact been inspected and it is serviceable. So anyway, I present that to the board, zoning commission, to see if it's just something we should keep an eye on or you might do something with.
Perfect.
Sir?
There's two provisions on propane tanks. If you have it serviced by a reputable propane dealer, you have two options. You either purchase the tank, which makes you responsible as the homeowner, or two, if it's a rental, then the agency who checks it and fills it is responsible for that.
Yeah. In all our cases, ours was the arrangements of the rental because they didn't want to be responsible for it. You're absolutely right, and I forgot that. Thank you.
Is this a safety issue? I mean,
Well, if you look at the ones that picture you're looking at right now, that's a little bit more than surface rust.
Oh, yeah. Great.
We got those out of there in 24 hours, and we sealed off the new owner didn't want to use it anyway, so we sealed off his lines to the house. But my concern is that they're sitting there on the ocean side. They're potential bombs. You know, we have tanks that run 200, 500, 1,000 pounds out there of propane. Okay. On a side note, this is a personal issue. It may not belong here, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. I've been having a discussion with the fire department and the state because it seems to me that they're upset that my little 20-pound propane tank, which is in my carport outside, is a bigger danger than 1,000 pounds sitting on the ocean side, ready to, you know, if something happens. So anyway, I've been settling that with the state. Side note, but last month I did ask the Kirby's Fire Department to be here, and they did show. My fault, I was not thinking so well this week, so I didn't get it done to bring them again. But anyway, I share that with you if it's worth looking into or just being aware.
What is the, since you had talked to the fire department, do they have an inspection or any jurisdiction over these?
They can inspect them. As a matter of fact, they were very glad that I brought them down because part of their fire planning, they would like to know if there's a building with 1,000 pounds of propane behind it, if they have a fire there.
Yeah.
So they were very glad that we took the tour together. Basically, again, as a fire safety issue, they'll walk around when they can and what they look at. We brought them down particularly because when we found this stuff, I wanted some real guidance.
Are you aware of any tie-down provisions in case of flood?
Yeah, the initial plan had tie-down if it was over 200. If it had to be over 200 pounds to be tied down. The plan that we're just approving to go forward, the part of John's plan, eliminates that, and it now says that it must be tied down regardless of size. Okay, so that is a change.
And this is in the flood zone or throughout?
It's in that flood plan that John that we just approved.
Okay, yeah.
How would that affect people? I mean, is that now a requirement for all of Curie Beach if this?
It's always been a requirement in the flood zone to be tied down. Mm-hmm. Either tied down or buried, one or the other.
Okay. And the flood zone goes?
It's basically, with the new maps, it's only going to be on the ocean front.
So it's only the ocean front that's going to be affected with this. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Just the question I have. I have trouble with the term ocean side. What does that mean? Let me give you a quick example. There is a house on Atlantic Avenue, for example, that's oceanfront except for that barrier in there. And historically, there has been a vacant lot beside that house. There's a house being built on it. But prior to that house being built, there was another house behind it. It's kind of in the middle because it doesn't face 421. So does that make that house facing that vacant lot oceanside? It doesn't. I know I'm getting kind of nitpicky, but you, to make these things
work,
you've got to have
good
definitions.
All those tanks were on the underneath our decks facing the ocean, and there's nothing in between.
It sounds like the definition is flood.
Well, it's going to be a floodplain. Yeah.
I mean, that
floodplain.
That's just for tie downs, though.
Yeah.
That's just for tie downs.
I mean, do you see safety issues here? That is it more aesthetic or safety or?
I don't know. That's definitely a safety issue.
I mean, it looks like a safety issue to me. Mine's not quite this bad, but I'm starting to, you know, and it's a rental. But I've actually tried to communicate. I forget who. I think it's Suburban actually. And they don't seem to be interested in doing anything about this, you know. So, you know, it doesn't look this bad, but it's getting to the point where, you know, I'm getting kind of concerned that we're leaking propane.
Well, you'll know it.
Yeah, you can smell it. I know. I go out there and smell it. About every other day I smell it because I'm convinced. So.
What is it that you think, Bill, we ought to, I mean, I know you're saying you're bringing it for our attention, but what's your vision of what
I don't know, maybe the yeah. town needs to be specific and inspect those things on a regular basis and you know, and come forward with a little bit tightening up what the state has and saying, for example, in our case, if you're going to put in a cement or a cylinder base or a cement block base, it must be at least 2 deep and buried hard so it can't erode, things like that. And then, and, you know, initially when we started out, we were tied down to everything out there. Right. But now the state has taken care of that with this new plant, so that's been handled.
And the flood, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, would you want the city to inspect it, or do you want to have require everybody to have a certificate, as you said?
That's not,
you know, it just seems to be a cost-shifting type of thing, then, rather than having the city go around and inspect it.
If you had a vendor like Suburban that's non-responsive, how do you get the certification?
That's true.
And like I said, the fire department did appreciate the fact that we located all of them and they put it on their fire plans.
Yeah, I mean, it is an issue because I'm pretty sure it's Suburban we have now, to the point that we're actually going to cut our Suburban service, so force them to come pick it out and go with another provider because we're just not getting response, you know, concern about these things. So
if we set each, well, then you have the ones that own their own tank. That you'd have to get inspection. I don't know how we can get an inventory.
I think there's a lot of personal accountability that has to do with this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The last thing I want to do is go inspect somebody's propane tank, make sure it doesn't have rust popping out.
Right.
That's a little ridiculous.
I mean, that's pretty bad.
You could put in that you have to have a certificate.
What is the certificate saying?
That the tank is safe,
still
structurally sound, you know, whatever. It's like when you take your tank in and they say, it's out of date, you know, your little ones, something like that. But you have to have it, and you have to maintain it at your house. I don't know what that does. At least it would make the I don't know, that's probably.
I think that responsibility, if it's a rental, is definitely falling back on the propane company, though. Because the big tanks have to be hydro just like the little ones do. I believe they're good for every 8 years, I believe is what they're good for.
Yeah.
Is that right, Bill?
Sounds about right. I'm not.
So did you, Commissioner, did you say that what you were discussing has been adopted as some guidelines for the HOA?
The Ocean Dunes HOA has adopted everything I talked about in addition to closing it in for aesthetic reasons.
And other than closing it in, could you remind me, please, what those provisions require?
Okay. We are now requiring that every everyone be strapped down regardless of size on the ocean side. We are also requiring that it be on a base of either a foreign cement base or, if they're using cinder blocks, at least too deep to stabilize so it doesn't fall over. In addition to that, we are requiring our membership that has them that by October on an annual basis, they send some sort of a certification to the HOA.
And did you all just, we referenced a second ago some of the logistical problems that might be run into in trying to get a certification. What understanding did your group come to with respect to getting that? Who provides it?
It is the owner's responsibility to get whatever's necessary to submit it to the board.
I'm just curious. If I had to do that, I'm not even sure where I would start.
Well, according to the owners that I spoke to, I mean, Suburban, for example, comes and tops them off on a once or twice a year, depending on how quickly they use it, and they're supposedly inspecting the thing and see whether it's serviceable or not. So we're just making sure the owner gets a statement from that company that says it was serviceable.
Have you gotten any such statements?
They're not due till October, so I would doubt it till then. You know, it's going to be a September push.
Maybe that's SOP for a propane vendor. I don't know.
It is SOP if you're a service contract with them.
Yes.
They have to start producing the certification for the homeowner to be presented to the HOA. That's a cost effective back on the homeowner.
It's just this piece of paper that says that I've checked it and it's fine. It's not a big deal.
They're not supposed to fill it unless it's in certification anyway,
right.
So that should not be. I mean, if the tank is, yeah, I mean, that's what Craig's saying. If the tank is not in certification for any reason, then they should be letting the homeowner know, we can't fill this. Anyway. But that.
Well, if that's the certification, I will probably have an additional charge because they're putting the name on this thing. So what's the liability factor on
that? I have a follow-up question, Chairman. Commissioner, in your all's discussions, did you discover whether, it's hard for me to imagine that other than flood damage prevention, it's a little hard to imagine that propane tanks are not regulated in some way by the state. Do you know?
They are minimally regulated by the state under the Department of Agriculture. As a matter of fact, I think his name is Charles Jones, who's the state fire commissioner. He and I have had extensive conversation on the phone over the 20-pound tanks that it got both ways. And we worked out what I think is an agreeable resolution to all those things. And he explained to me that was part of the issues is they were trying to take the rules for the 200-pound ones and apply it to the 20, and that's inappropriate. So there are the specific rules that are out there I've given you. And that's pretty much all. And they come down, unfortunately, from the Department of Agriculture Board's guidelines.
As a representative from the town council, what would you think? Is this something that the town council would want us to look at or not?
I've got a feeling Hegler would probably want us to look at it, you know, just with his association with the fire department.
And come up with a recommendation, you know, whatever it might be.
I see it as a safety issue here.
Okay.
So, I don't know if we're overreaching here, but we could definitely, y'all make a recommendation, we could address it with council.
I would suggest we continue this to the next meeting and then have maybe you bring in what your HOA has put together in terms of requirements.
And if you'd like,
so we do some background research and things like that.
If you'd like, I would invite the fire department, Captain's Wacky from the fire department.
I think that's critical because we could cover a lot of ground by talking to a representative of the fire department.
That's fine.
Do we want to ask also a representative of one of the propane companies here, Suburban or something like that?
I think we're in a position that we need to know as much as we need to know in order to come up with a recommendation. So the more the merrier.
Well, I will be glad to contact Suburban and ask them to send a representative here to talk about, I mean, the whole nature of propane tanks and corrosion and safety and all that sort of thing. I mean, I assume they would know probably better than anybody. So
yeah, I'm sure
I would
Captain Zracky would come out a problem.
Okay, all right. So let.
And instead of oceanfront, we're just talking about right now flood zones, basically.
Well, I think in general for a safety issue, I mean, there's.
We're talking about the whole town.
I will guarantee you that in the Keys, which is outside the flood zone, that there's corroded propane tanks there. I mean, there's no question about it. They originally buried them, and they got absolutely corroded when they were buried because of the moisture and everything like that. That we had to disconnect it, period. So, but at least it was on the ground, so it wasn't leaking where you could smell it. But.
Okay. So we're looking at it from the whole town perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's a safety issue.
And I think once we get the fire department's input to it, we can make some decisions.
So I guess I'll make a motion to continue the item to our next meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Or, no, second.
Second, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. All right. Any further discussion? Okay. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. So, you know, based upon that, we'll all kind of do our research. Or you're going to contact the fire chief?
I'll
go ahead and contact Suburban. So. All right. Next item, revised definition of structure and consider outdoor shower enclosures. This is really kind of two things. One, I believe, is the just general definition of a structure within the code, and perhaps the fuzziness. You know, when we were looking at the shower enclosure issue, there seemed to be a little bit of fuzziness and lack of definition, I think, in the definition of a structure there. And then specifically with the outdoor shower enclosure. So you have brought together a new definition or any recommendations on that at all? Or
I'm sorry, Chairman, I didn't know I was tasked.
No, okay.
No, it was a task, but I just wondered if it's something that you thought about.
No, we were going to talk about that. The first issue that I started with John after the gentleman was here on the setback, and there appeared to be no distinction on what you could build. I said, would it help if we put in on any shower that you put, any outdoor shower, if an enclosure, I put 4x4 and John said that's too restrictive, and I agree. If you put an outdoor shower in any enclosure that you would put on that outdoor shower would encroach on the setback, then you can't put it there. You'd have to put it around back or wherever. So it would limit the area that outdoor showers could be placed. Or it would put a rule that if you put an outdoor shower, you know now you can't put something around it that would encroach on the...
To take that one step further, when the commission reviewed Lawler's proposed text amendment, I think it was a proposed text amendment.
Mm-hmm. Right, yes it was.
To allow encroachment into the setback, I think the commission denied that request but recommended that he look into, so to speak, a portable.
Right. So it wouldn't be, but you know, I think to bifurcate the discussion is simply look at the definition of the structure, you know, right now, you know, because I think when we were having that discussion about that proposal, we went to the definition of a structure and we were kind of throwing out different types of thing that could have been put there, the shower enclosure being one. And there's, I think, a general feeling that maybe we could fine tune the definition of a structure there.
And just for everybody's edification, the code currently defines that as anything constructed or erected, the use of which requires location on the land, including freestanding billboard signs and fences. So there's some ambiguity there.
That's what we're concerned about.
Even if you had a shower enclosure on wheels, it's still located on
right.
the land. But it's not fixed.
So I think that was a concern is, do we want to add that it's fixed, you know, that there's some sort of a permanent characteristic to that. So
and in thinking about that, what was the second prong of your bifurcation?
Just talking about shower enclosures, you know, whether we want to include shower enclosures maybe as an exemption to that or not. Or
and have you given any thought as to structures that are not affixed?
Well, that's why I think we need to have a discussion, because you know, when I think of a structure, and this in the context of a setback, but if we change the definition of a structure, it also affects other things within the code too, where the structure is referenced. But at least in the setback context, you know, when we were talking about putting this on wheels, or maybe you know, just something that would be hooked or latched or something like that, where if the fire department needed to get in there, they could quickly move it. Right now, that still, as you pointed out, would be defined as a structure. But then you can think of a lot of other examples that are kind of silly examples that, with our current definition of a structure, technically would be a structure. You know, let's say a grill, you know, for example. Could that be defined as a structure, given our current definition?
And if you had, so to speak, freestanding structures, movable structures, just for the sake of discussion, have you given any thought to tropical events and what happens to... Say you had a shower enclosure on wheels, you could see a pretty significant object flying through the air. I think I'm not suggesting anything about that. I'm wondering if you've had any thoughts about that.
I was thinking kind of the opposite thing, because some of the things that we've talked about, which is encroaching, you know, like tool sheds. You know, we talked about tool sheds for a while. Well, tool sheds, there's a lot of tool sheds that are just sitting on the ground, okay, that look like structures, feel like structures, but technically are also mobile too. You know, they're not on a foundation, let's say. So I was just thinking, when I suggested that we look at the issue of structure, is to kind of fine-tune the definition of a structure so it will allow things that we want to have allowed, but then restrict things that we want to have restricted in terms of our setback requirements and that sort of things.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but these questions would help in that definition. What kind of things would the commission think should be allowed? We talked about shower enclosures.
I think a shower enclosure that is easily movable should be allowed. I don't think that if somebody brings in goes over to Home Depot and buys one of their 6x10 tool sheds there and plop it down on their grass, that should be allowed.
You're talking about like a little portable building?
Well, yeah, some of them are pretty big too, these portable buildings.
Anything else that the commission would think of just in this give and take about what might be, again, structure in quotes to be allowed in as an encroachment in the same line, like a shower enclosure, a movable shower enclosure? For example, privacy fence, is that something that's going to come up?
But aren't fences allowed on the property line?
Well, I use the term loosely, not fence, but what's this, if you're going to have a movable shower enclosure, what's the limitation, if any, on getting putting up lattice work of some height on wheels that you could move around and block yourself off from your neighbors?
Screening. Thank you.
Well, can we? This all started because it started that we want showers on the side of the house where it could possibly, I think that's the first question. I mean, the structure is, to me, is a separate question from that. Do we want to restrict showers, location of showers on houses that could infringe on the setback? So that is one question. Then the structure.
May I rephrase that?
Sure.
So you're saying if it is a shower enclosure, for example, it has to be it can't encroach on the setback.
Whatever. I mean, does that help you? If it doesn't help you, let's not talk.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what we're trying to accomplish. I was a little confused with what you were trying to accomplish in your emails.
Okay.
And
you had said that a lot of these showers that are, especially duplexes, that if the people standing in them sometimes are in the zone, and that you had asked, well, why can't you move it to the back? So what I was trying to convey is that, okay, if it's an issue with the shower being put so close to the setback, and we said, okay, no, you can't put a shower there now, because now you would encroach on a setback with any kind of structure, you got to move it around to the back.
So you're saying that as part of plan review, put an ordinance into place that would allow me to tell somebody they couldn't put an outside shower on the side of the house if there was potential that they put an enclosure around it that.
Well, I see, yeah, that gets, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, that's not really.
I mean, does that help you? If it's all like, you know, there's too many ifs in that sentence, so it really doesn't help.
And what's the difference between a shower enclosure and an enclosure to hide your trash cans?
Or a propane tank.
Propane tank's not supposed to be in the setback either.
but the enclosure of it might go in the setback.
It might be, and then it could be relegated to 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
No, if that's not that big of an issue, then...
Oh, no, it's a big issue. That's why I'm sending these people to the commission, because everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants a 6-foot fence. Everybody wants a storage shed, and everybody wants an outside shower. So I think that's part of my responsibility when I have recurring issues to bring them to you guys.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad we're talking about them. If you guys feel that we shouldn't change the ordinance, then fine. I'll keep on telling people they can't have what they want. That's fine with me. I appreciate you talking about that. Yeah. I really do.
My general feeling is that if something is temporary but easily movable, and we could define easily movable in terms of weight or physical dimensions, like a 4x4 doesn't weigh over 60 pounds or something like that.
You know, based on what you're talking about, someone that's reasonably competent with a tool can take that thing apart in 5 minutes and move it out of the way.
Yeah.
Is that considered temporary?
Well, you know, that's what I, you know, we could fine tune that, but what I don't have a problem with side showers. What I have a problem is if it encroaches on the setback.
Exactly.
And cannot be moved very, very quickly. Now, it's true, somebody, you know, if there's a fire, I mean, you know, somebody could get a sledgehammer and knock the thing down, but I think that kind of defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do. You know, so I don't have a real problem if it's somehow easily mobile. It's on wheels, it can be pushed, you know, that sort of thing. You know, because to me, then it's like a piece of furniture. It's like a grill you can push around and that sort of thing.
If
you get too big, then it gets too heavy and you can't do that.
I just wonder how many people would actually pursue trying to do something like that.
Oh, I would do it. I mean, if I had a side shower and I had the encroachment, well, like the person who came here. I mean, the easy solution to me is, given the current, you know, the current definition of a structure, if they put that on wheels. Okay, and just put it right up there, maybe with two hooks to hold it in place or something like that. They probably wouldn't have even had to come to us about that, because I think that would be allowed under the existing. And if I was them, rather than trying to change our whole code, I think that was a pretty simple solution, you know, to have an outside shower and just put the thing on wheels and, you know, hook it in place.
If we went down that road, would you limit that flexibility at first to shower enclosures and nothing else?
I would rather than doing shower enclosures, I would rather do it based on size and weight. You know, and, you know, so, I mean, technically a propane enclosure. You know, I mean, we were joking about that, but in fact, you might have a propane enclosure that might go to the setback by 6 inches or something like that, too.
If you did it by size and weight, could you just give an example so I could...
Well, I think a shower, you know, shower enclosure, I think a propane enclosure, I think a trash enclosure, you know, these sort of things are the things that we should allow for aesthetic reasons and privacy reasons, but, you know, allow within the setback as long as that it's, you know, it's easy to move, you know, if we need to.
If you eliminated weight, which I don't see how you could regulate or enforce, can you get...
John can pick them all up and test them.
Yeah, that would be the issue. How does he know what it weighs?
Can you get to where you want to go on height alone?
I think size is the key, not height. But I think it'd be, you know, because a shower enclosure, somebody wants it 6 feet or something like that. Trash enclosures might be 4 feet, 5 feet. You know, I don't know.
Well, then we could get down and limit, say a shower enclosure cannot be any more than 4x4 and movable. That's a lot of, that's, you know.
That would be my suggestion, is that you can't have, it has to be movable. If something's going to be in a setback, that it's got to be movable and it can't be larger than 4x4 or, you know, something like that.
If you don't, you're going to have an extra room in that that's going to be movable.
4x4x4.
Yeah, well, 4x4, you know, 4x4, I don't care if it's six feet high or... And not higher than 6 feet or something like that.
I think we either have to come up with a norm, or we micromanage different things and provide for different sizes, which I don't think we want to get into all that.
No. And that's why I think just giving a size, a definition that it's movable, and that you a 4x4 by and no greater than 6 feet tall.
What would you do? I'm building one. I said, yeah, that's movable. It's 4x4. Would you ask me to demonstrate that it's movable or just?
Probably look and see if your
plates
are in the ground. If they're not in the ground, I'm going to turn around and walk away.
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
that's fair enough.
Pick your battles.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I think then that takes care of a lot of the problems that you have with people who want
to. It just needs to be very clear and very short, though. It's not a whole lot of specifications.
Yeah, I think it's
pretty short. If someone calls me up, I don't have to explain it for 30 minutes.
Right. You still may have to.
It's got to be movable.
4x4, movable, and no higher than 6 feet. There you go.
Do you like that?
What are you going to move it for?
For emergency.
Yeah, emergencies. So, I mean,
the house is on fire, you're going to take time to think.
Well, that was my
God. No. But
I got to go move my.
But if the house behind you
is on fire.
But if the house behind you is on fire and they have to get access through there, then it's movable because it's in the setback.
Yeah, but the whole key is a setback. The reason we have setbacks is
safety. In the setback.
And that's the critical point.
So you have this movable thing out there, and it's late summer, and we get a nor'easter comes through with some high winds, and you're not home for the weekend, and it picks this movable structure
that's
up.
That's the other
slams
end.
Slams it into your siding, ruins your home, or picks it up and slams it into something else. Your
neighbor's
home
or
vehicle.
But that's the response. I mean, we still have that problem with patio furniture and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's still a responsibility of the homeowner to make sure it doesn't do that.
Yeah, my concern,
that's where we're asking for a lot, I think.
And my concern on this thing is basic. It's more, do the first responders in an emergency really have that kind of time to go move it? It's very simple.
They're going
to
knock it down.
Well, if they got to get through there, we're going to get through there.
Oh, if it's movable, they'll move it before they knock it down.
No, it doesn't matter if it's movable or not. They're going to move it.
They're
going to move it. I've cut down several 6-foot fences with a chainsaw in my fire career.
Yeah.
I mean, you go down to the beach. We have a beach side shower. So the main purpose of that is that you're washing off all the sand and everything, so you get in your vehicle. So in an enclosed shower on the side of a house or the back of the house, evidently is that you're going out there to take a shower.
Yes.
And you're stripped down.
Yes. That's what they do. Yeah. People do.
So, I mean,
and I raised the issue last time. I said, well, just take a shower with your swimsuit on, you know. But they didn't seem to like that. Everybody else wants to take their clothes off, you know. I don't take my clothes off, but everybody else takes their clothes off.
So what can you say? We're taking this thing full circle. It sounds like it's nothing.
You want to change the dimensions of that shower?
It sounds like we're coming just in a circle, and it's better just to do nothing on it.
Well, if we do nothing, then we're back to the same problem.
Well, I'm just going
not allowing shower. I mean, right now, anything if it goes in the setback will not be allowed.
Clearly, it's not a problem if we don't want to change it. So.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
But I mean, you're going to say no more often. You know, to outside showers.
I mean.
The rule
I'm
stands.
Not trying to push it either way. I appreciate y'all talking about it, but there's probably going to be some more people that come around. So.
Then I would suggest that we take a vote now. And the vote could be to let it stand as it is, if that's the wish of the commission. I have no problem with that. Or we continue the item, and maybe next month, I'd be glad to kind of try to write up something. You know, based upon dimensions or something like that, that might change it. But it sounds like, you know, some people on the commission would rather leave it the way it is. So,
are you looking for a motion?
Yes.
Okay. I move that we make no changes to the structure ordinance as written, and you can't put a structure that transverses over the setback.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on that? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. All in favor, I'll oppose it. So it's 3-1. Okay. All right. Well, that was simple.
So no action on that?
No action. No, we're going to leave it the way it is. Parking for short-term rentals.
Craig, you were at the council meeting when we discussed parking. It was brought up by several people, short-term rentals and parking issues that they do. council, y'all can come up with some guidelines for that, however y'all see fit.
Is this in addition to what was done by the parking, the ad hoc parking committee?
This is going to be more specific, yeah, just for those.
Yeah, the text amendments that the ad hoc committee came up with do not address this issue.
Okay.
Some things that the ad hoc committee, because we met tonight to try to change some things, which we're going to talk about here in a moment before we finish with this. There's going to be, you can park in the right of way, but you have to be at the property you're staying on. So there's no, you can't stay at one house and go park in an empty lot down the street in the right of way. But just like you mentioned, there's a house with 15 vehicles.
Yeah.
Well, my question is, because this has come up before, is it currently, do we have something in the code that addresses this already?
Not short-term rentals. No, it's my question. Are we addressing houses that are used as short-term rentals, or are we talking about parking in general for all new residential structures?
Well, I think with the new, looking forward, I think we should look at even potentially parking spaces to ratio to bedrooms.
Yeah, I would. That's a great point. I would not limit, if we're going to go down this road and do something, I would not limit it to STRs, because you're just going to run into all kinds of problems. Yeah. So if you keep it to residential structures in general, I think that would work. You're still going to have some issues, but I think it'd be less.
Well, the problem in the current parking code is that it allows people to park on their, you know, basically their front yard. You know, it could be grass. I mean, yeah, we have a regulation. We've got it in the driveway. You've got to have a driveway. But if you have a whole bunch of grass in your front yard, as long as you're not in an HOA, that prohibits that. Which is the 15 cars that are parked over there right now. They got them scattered all over the front yard. They got a completely packed front yard.
And several homes on Fort Fisher Boulevard don't have driveways.
Well, the amendments in this commission approved or reported favorably on setback amendments, which allow parking in the front setback, front yard setback. But the number of cars that goes there can still be regulated based on what Mr.
Oh, okay. Says. All right. So you're saying that we would allow front back setback parking, but you can only have a certain number of cars based upon the number of bedrooms.
Here's it in a nutshell. We already allow front yard setback parking.
Right.
And that's because of the limitation of available parking spaces in town. One reason. Going back to the STR concept just for a second, it's my understanding, based on what I hear, that there are public concerns about vacation rentals with excessive number of cars parked on the property and all the things that accompanies that, sticking out into a parking space, just creating kind of parking problems. So we've addressed a lot of, and we'll discuss this in a few minutes, we'll address the We've addressed a lot of the issues through proposed text amendments to the parking regulations, but we have not touched on the idea of how you regulate the number of vehicles for residential structures. If you do that with respect to residential structures and it's effective, it would mitigate the STR problem just by its very nature.
Now, before we kind of talk about this, the natural way of doing it is you regulate the number of cars per bedroom. I mean, that's kind of the natural way of doing it. But you have some of these properties here that may have 12 bedrooms in them.
Well, and also, what came up in the committee meeting this afternoon was, how's the enforcement officer going to know how many bedrooms are in there? Mm-hmm. Now, he's going down the street and he sees a bunch of cars. He's got to be able to figure out if that's in compliance or not, but to do that, he needs to know the number of bedrooms.
We had a great proposal about 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, I believe you were on it, that we would have a certificate process, and that got shot down pretty fast. That'd be pretty.
That's where we talked about it.
Yes.
That's correct. I recall that now.
Well, I wasn't here. Can you summarize? Why did it fail?
We had about 60 real estate people show up.
Yeah, plus your attorneys.
You were not on the board at that time?
I don't think so, but I came in after.
The most people I've ever seen at a meeting. It was standing room only.
Yeah, we were recommending, you know, because some of the bad behaviors and safety issues.
Well, we went in for safety too, because that deck had just collapsed down at Oak Island because too many people were on.
So we were suggesting that basically, and the other thing too is that people aren't paying the taxes. So that was another reason too. They're not paying their.
But we resolved that issue. Caught up pretty well with that.
Okay.
So you know, we were proposing that, you know, that you get a certificate. We have to be inspected, you know, to make sure some safety issues were in place and things like that. But also define the number of bedrooms. So we could have actually had that in the record, but there was mass outrage to that one. So.
And their basis for the outrage was just they didn't want to be regulated?
Or? Absolutely, yeah. That was basically it.
They'd be responsible. They'd have to, if they had 10, and a rental company with 10 properties, you would have to have an account designating
each one of these things.
Each property when it was rented. And,
because that's not required by the tax rules right now.
A lot of room for whatever.
Yeah, okay, all right.
How does that affect the portion that the town has laid away on? Is in the front of the contracts?
That stuff, when a new property is built, right away cannot be considered as part of your required parking.
Right. And as you'll hear in a couple of minutes, the concept for the new parking provision is simply expressed as follows. No parking on the right-of-way, which includes not just the pavement, but the areas adjacent to the pavement. No parking in the right-of-ways unless it's in a designated parking space. So, given that, I agree with John that the issue of limiting or regulating the number of parking for residential structures does not have anything to do with the right-of-way.
Okay. You know, coming back to the bedrooms, wouldn't the tax rules, because that's somewhat based on bedrooms, I mean, isn't there a way of getting a record of the bedrooms per property? Because I believe part of the tax definition is based upon the number of bedrooms.
It's just square footage, okay.
And there's no way to look at just, I mean, they have 12 bedrooms, but they only have two garages.
I don't know of any property in Curie Beach that has 12 bedrooms.
Well, okay, whatever.
But people are building homes with four bedrooms and then a large walk-in closet, which suddenly 3 months
becomes
later
has a bedroom. Or a den, or a library,
or a bunk
things
bed,
like that.
Something like that.
Study.
Business office, yeah.
Is there any logic to just, if your driveways can hold three cars, that's the only cars you can have there? I mean,
because we allow them to park in the setback. Oh, you know, I mean, they can park wherever they want.
You got to get across the right of way to get to the setback, right?
Well, there's no prohibition.
So, what are we ultimately trying to accomplish?
Limit
the number of cars per property.
Residential
property.
I mean, ideally, most communities base it upon the number of bedrooms. I mean, there's a formula, you have a number of bedrooms and stuff like that, but you're right, you know, how are you going to enforce it? How many, do you know how many bedrooms are in these houses and that sort of thing? If I was going to try to limit it, I would simply say one car per bedroom up to a certain number, and then it maxes out at six cars or something like that. That's it.
Yeah, most of these places only have parking for two or three. That's where the problem comes in, right?
And you can't use the garages in a lot of the properties.
Yeah, we just found out.
They have bikes and beach floats. And
so is it
grills so that people's renting it can do whatever they want, but
propane
they can't
tanks.
Use it. Propane tanks.
The garage.
Explosive propane tanks.
Rusty ones.
Yeah.
Corrosive explosive ones.
No, so we're just talking about limiting the number of cars, not where they park. I mean, we still have other regulations as to where they can park.
And where there's other places
to park in the town.
Yes.
Well, the number of cars per bedroom will directly dictate how big that house is going to be and how many bedrooms it will have.
That's why I said you have to have a max. You know,
people can fit there.
Number of cars up to a max, kind of a diminishing return in economics. There's a diminishing return to building more bedrooms.
The way the ordinance is written right now, for the first three bedrooms, you have to have two parking spaces for every unit. And after every bedroom after that is one additional parking space.
How many do you have to have? Two parking spaces per bedroom?
Two for three.
And then one one-to-one after that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Does that work?
No, there's no point. No, that's the whole point.
Well, the problem is there is the minimum. If you reversed it and say the max you can have.
Well, we also have a definition of a bedroom in the ordinance.
But again, you can't go and inspect because you're right. I mean, some of these probably are certified at 4 or 5 bedrooms, and yet there's probably eight or nine bedrooms.
We're not doing construction right now. No, there's no way we can enforce.
Right.
We're really looking at the 260 empty lots out there. Help with that.
So this is to look to go forward.
Well, we'd like to bring in some of the problem areas.
Yeah.
I mean, there's safety issues. Like, he said, 15 cars in the
driveway. Yeah, when you drive down there, there isn't
a... child could dart up the street from that property. Yeah.
They're all in the bike lane. They're all over the place, yeah.
Well, that's going to be taken care of, the bike lane,
yeah.
Back wheels in the street, all that's going to start being
that's
taken
true.
Care of.
That's true.
What if you took the existing provisions and just plugged in a cap?
Cap the number of cars?
Well, we don't have a provision on number of cars, just on lots, on space.
Well, that's what he's saying, just add a cap.
2 for 3, 1 to 1 after that, maximum of 6 cars. Just for an example.
Okay, I guess the other issue.
Yeah, you'll have a bounce out from that.
They have 8 cars, and the officer goes in, and he said, yeah, well, these two are up the street. They're just visiting. See, I don't know how.
This would be on the property. So, I mean, if they still want to park in the right of way, they want to park in an existing parking on the street, that's fine. We're just simply saying maximum 6 cars on the property. That's all.
A 6 was an arbitrary number.
That's a good number.
You don't have to make a decision tonight, but just something to think about.
Yeah.
If we make a decision. 1 month goes by, bring the text amendment to discuss, so you're losing a month if you don't get a consensus on how to proceed.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the more I think about it, just the idea of limiting the number of cars per that can be parked in a lot. So we're not saying where, because we've got other ordinance that deals with that, but simply say the maximum number of cars parked on a property is 6.
But how do we enforce that?
Count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You
even if they're visiting, you're saying if there's other places for them to park.
What about a duplex?
Then it would be 3 on each.
That's where you get the most pushback.
Once again, how do you enforce that?
Well, let me ask you a question. Your current provisions that we're talking about, are they in Chapter 19?
They are.
So there wouldn't be a citation. It'd be it wouldn't be a parking ticket, it'd be a NOV or a citation.
The NOV is a citation.
You're being quiet.
That's correct. The only way we can do that is if we worded that ordinance around where you only require one
selecting
NOV a year, and that's it. And that'll apply for that. But and throughout that entire calendar year, every time there's more than 6 cars there, that person would get a violation per day.
And after the NOV, you get a first citation. I mean, it's a little onerous, but they've got BOA to appeal to if we're wrong and they're right.
I mean, you might as well just put it in my budget for a code enforcement
officer. Oh, we're going to have to hire just a parking. I mean, we got enough little golf carts, get a parking person driving around a golf cart. They would make TV shows about that.
I think they should put it under the police department. You're exactly right.
I think you should work weekends, Joe.
No comment.
Get mad at me in a minute.
I mean, is there any discussion or do we want to incorporate it with the general parking discussion that's going to come right now?
Go
ahead, John.
I don't think the residential parking regulations fit within the parking traffic type provisions. I think it's going to end up staying in Chapter 19.
How do you feel since you actually were the one that put this on?
Well, it was mentioned so often
in
that night in the council meeting that I felt we had to try to do something to address it.
I mean, I don't mind making it 8, but there are at least, I don't know if it's 15, but there's at least 12 cars parked over there. And they've got them, I mean, literally packed. The whole front yard is packed, and maybe a couple are kind of hanging out into the right of way. But they squeeze a lot of cars on there.
Is that a bad thing?
It doesn't look very nice, that's for sure.
Well,
and it's a safety issue too, I think, to some extent.
So let's go back to the issue that you brought up originally. You
Right. Which I personally don't like, but that's the way it's written. You know, I don't like people parking on grass, personally. But that's the way it's written. So what I'm thinking about now is that, you know, six cars parked or eight cars parked there would be more safe, more aesthetically pleasing, not as damaging to the neighbors, you know, all that sort of thing, than having 12 cars literally. I mean, the only way I could see that they could have gotten out of that is to open the windows and crawl down on top of other cars to be able to get out of the cars. The way it is, so.
Is this another one where we say, try it for 6 months,
yeah,
try it for
a season? Yeah, I was just going to say, the whole concept of the parking amendment, which we'll discuss in a minute, is a pilot program.
Yeah.
Test it and see what happens. Personally, I think that I'm not speaking for John by any means, because it's his turf. But I think something needs to be done, because I keep hearing about it. I think a simple approach is to cap it at 8 and see what council does with it, and if they run with it, see how it works.
Well, we'd have to, of course, reach out to all the short-term rental providers and send them something out to the town, the VRBO, so they can read it, and so they can be aware.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be a zoning amendment, so there would be due process and advertisements, public hearings, and all that jazz.
I'm sure it would be a fun one.
Can you, if that's the if that's the inclination of the commission to make that recommendation to the council, I mean, if we're just going to cap it at 8, can you right now get language that would be very simple language that would cap it at 8 so we could vote on that and pass it forward rather than waiting another month?
What happened to 6?
Well, or 6.
Here's what's going
to... I guess we could vote and get a feel for 6.
With the parking issues, P&Z is going to have another meeting this month. Because y'all are going to need to approve the text amendment after he rewrites it.
Yeah, let me introduce that topic. Yeah. The committee met... the proposed amendments went... I guess council had a public hearing on them.
Yeah.
There was a lot of public comments on them. And the committee, this ad hoc committee, met again this afternoon subsequent to those public comments. And we include there were some members of the public that attended that committee meeting, and lasted about an hour and a half, and I'm pleased to say that everything that was discussed was pretty much already covered by the amendments. There are no substantive changes that have to be made to those amendments. We do have to make 3 or 4 tweaks, little tweaks, and for that reason, of course, now I'm talking about the parking amendments, not the bedrooms. For that reason, if we're going to get it in place for the season, Mr. Whitley is going to propose, and I think Mr. Richardson as well, that this commission have a special meeting on June 19th, limited to parking, so they could review the report and get it to council in time for council to act on a timely basis.
Yeah, Monday, June 19th, or I don't know how much notice we have to give.
It's a week, isn't it?
Tuesday the
19th. Well, you'd have to give, if you wrap Chapter 19 into it, you're going to have to give
2 days.
Yeah, probably doesn't sound
not
like
not less than 10, no more than 25, so I don't think you can, probably can't do Chapter 19 on the 19th. But what you...
Well, no, I think you can.
Because you all don't do a public hearing.
Right.
Right. We're just making
the big thing is our council meeting is the 19th. We want to be able to adopt these if we do the 19th, so they'll be in place by July 4th. That gives us July, August, Labor Day weekend to see how everything goes.
I thought you were talking about a special meeting with PZC.
Monday the 18th.
And yeah. I think that's, given that this is the 6th, right?
Yeah.
I believe that's a sufficient time for us to provide notice for a meeting on the 18th.
Oh, 40, it's a special, so it's only 48 hours.
Oh, 40, okay.
Okay.
On the 18th, I'm available then. So look, segueing back or arcing back to your comment, if we're going on the residential parking regulations, if we're simply going to plug in a cap, I could have those available to the commission in advance along with the parking amendments by themselves in advance of the 18th. And then your agenda item.
We would have 2 agenda items.
Yeah, and the notice for the special meeting would have to track that, those two agenda items.
So the agenda, the two agenda items would be from the ad hoc?
Yeah, they would be two agenda items. Report and review on proposed text amendments to Chapter 19 regulating residential parking.
Right.
And report and review on
a cap.
Chapter 10 text amendments regulating parking within the town's corporate limits.
Okay, and that would then include the discussion of putting a cap on the number of cars.
That's Chapter 19.
That's Chapter 19, okay. All right, okay.
Did you get that language pretty good?
And y'all have, y'all, however y'all go with that on the 18th, and we address it on the 19th.
Is everybody available here for the 18th?
Yes.
I'm good. Put that under chapter 11 licenses or something.
That's on a Monday, right?
Yeah, Monday the 18th.
Take it out of 19.
I will be gone starting that Wednesday, but I'm available on the 18th. Do we need to make a motion for that? We actually do have to have a motion for a special meeting, I believe. Yeah.
I make a motion that we hold a special meeting on June 18th to discuss two items, amendments to
Chapters 10 and 19.
10 and 19.
Is there a second?
I second.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
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 What time is that meeting?
6:00. 6:30, 7, whatever.
I mean, we usually do 7, so 7's a...
Okay.
Yeah, 7.
7's fine.
So 48 hours notice, and again, the notice for a special meeting needs to include what would be in the agenda as well. Notices for special meetings are more detailed than regular meetings.
Okay, as it is special meeting. So your language isn't sufficient for the...
No, it is.
It is. Well, then
the language that you should use both for the notice and the agenda.
Okay, so your language that you just gave there, is that sufficient for the notice also?
Both.
Okay, all right.
And can we get you to draw something up on, say, 6 cars max?
I thought it was 8, or what do you all want?
Well, the language, I mean, drop the language, and then we can plug in the number.
Yeah, okay, I'll leave it blank.
Yeah, just leave it blank.
Okay, we can discuss that.
We can discuss it.
Things to consider, is that per lot, per unit, per complex?
I'm taking the existing provisions and just inserting a phrase up to a maximum of blank.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because six may cut it for generally, but I can have 6 people in my driveway, so it's 2 cars in the garage.
That's all for new construction.
Yeah. Well, what's in your garage no one's looking at?
Shit.
That's true.
They don't exist if they're in the garage.
Yeah, and when you write it up, I mean, we just made a good point. It's a number of cars external, not including in the garage.
Well, but
that's what I'm saying. We don't want to include anything that's in the garage in this limit. No, I was making the same argument.
You don't want a car.
It's only that's external.
Right. So it's only external is that what we're talking about. External, not the number of cars parked on the lot because they might have some inside the garage.
I agree with you.
Yeah. No. This is external to the garage.
In other words, 8 cars, hypothetically, 8 cars max parked outside of the garage.
Leave it blank, but we're talking about when you write the recommended ordinance, it's parked outside or external to it, and then we can debate whether it's 4, 6, or 8 or something like that. Okay.
Of this ad hoc committee address parking cars anywhere on someone's property, and these are junk cars that are no longer have a valid license or inspection?
The ordinance allows one vehicle in the back of the yard, so long as it's covered. One.
Does the code already provide for derelict vehicle?
It does.
That's in 19.
I don't know where it is.
Okay.
It's in the vehicle.
It's in chapter 11, I believe.
Yeah. We looked at that, Ken, remember?
Yeah.
Before we leave this topic,
it's titled in my wife's name, and she just won't get rid of it.
Mr. Chairman?
Before we leave this topic, John has brought up a point that I wasn't aware of. The 2-3 and 1-1 is for new construction. Doesn't get to the root of the problem, which is residential structures. John also suggested possibly moving it to 11 we might, if it's only, if the current provisions are only for new, that's only part of the problem.
Right.
Maybe I can plug something into 19 that regulates residential parking along the same lines. Or if the board thinks it's wise, and I'll let John speak to this, maybe consider moving it into chapter 11.
So how would that, can you make a recommendation for the notice of the special meeting of that language to allow that flexibility when talking about this?
It's just basically 10, 11, and 19.
But we have. But
well, the police powers are different than the different sections yeah. of ordinance. That's one reason I mentioned going to chapter 11.
That's still code enforcement, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But should other representatives of the town be in charge of that particular area of ordinance, such as the police department, they would have no problem enforcing those in chapter 11. Whereas in chapter 19, we'd have to make ordinance changes that would declare who and who would be enforcing that portion of the ordinance.
Hang on just a minute, I got an idea. But educate me about something. Are you saying that in this town, the police can also, I'm used to code enforcement only doing public nuisances. In this town, the police have some jurisdiction over that?
If it's on the town right away, it's part of the nuisance ordinance, yes.
How about if we do this?
That's just a thought, though.
How about if we do this? Let's leave the motion as it is, which refers to chapter 19, and I'll consider adding some additional language that a violation of the provisions we've been talking about may constitute a public nuisance, and that gives you the discretion to kick it over.
Well, all I'm thinking is from a legal point of view is that we have to identify in the notice specifically what we're going to talk about.
So
the language that we're talking about right now is...
You're good with what you've got.
Okay, all right. That's fine. Okay. Anything else on parking? Long-term planning. Mayor would like to hear recommendations from P&Z for suggestions that will help in preserving the central business district. We had a little flurry of emails on this one since.
You had left the meeting with the parking. You had
okay,
left,
yeah,
you
know, yeah.
And at the end of the meeting, the mayor had said, as I was half dozing off, is anybody here from P&Z? And I kind of said, and I didn't really get it on my notes, so I asked him to provide me this email, which then I sent to each of the P&Z members. So, yeah, I think you all have it. He is concerned about preserving the business district. He's worried about, I guess, as current owners retire and other people take over, and just wants us to start putting that in, I guess, in our thinking about what we need to do, if anything, to the business district.
And also, the way I read it, too, is that the adjacent districts to the business districts, too, and that's why we're talking about the overlay type of issues there. So.
So, an important thing to mention when you start this conversation is that there are 13 lots in the B1 district that can be immediately rebuilt with a brand new single family home at any time. And that's part of the reason this has come up, because brand new single family residence is being built
on Atlantic.
Oceanfront Park. Did you know that was in the ordinance?
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah.
Say that again.
So the B1 allows residential.
House in the B1 district.
Which there was
a single family house.
Yeah.
And you decide you want a bigger house, you can tear that one down and build a brand new big house.
Now, can somebody tear down a commercial building and build a residential? Is that allowed in the B1?
Yeah, technically, no. If it was used as a residential use, it has to remain. You can put a new residential use on it.
Okay.
Historically, we've had property owners tear down commercial properties and go to board adjustments immediately and were granted a variance because they didn't have any viable commercial uses for that property. It was too small. And they were granted the variance.
Mm-hmm. Well, even though I asked him for this, I didn't say anything to the mayor. What is it that we really need to start doing, if anything?
Well, this, there are some state laws now that restrict the ability of local communities on aesthetics. But the aesthetics, if I remember right, and maybe you can help me out.
Single family, double family.
So, but we still have a little more flexibility in terms of aesthetic issues related to commercial districts
and
businesses.
You're not limited at all.
Right.
You
so
can do it, you can do an overlay and specify architectural details.
That's exactly what I was going to get at. Can you overlay? Can we overlay a district on top of a area that allows residential and then have aesthetics through the overlay process, even though it may attach to residential opportunities?
Wouldn't it be prudent to rezone it to eliminate the residential?
But rezoning is a much more difficult process.
It's just the same thing. It's just a permitted use, is all it is.
Yeah, you just rezone to eliminate residential as a permitted use in that district.
Well, I'm thinking of the districts that are adjacent to the central business district right now, because the mayor asked us to look at those areas too, because I think there was some concern that some of those hotels as the...
See what I'm getting at?
So, those hotels, is that business district
all up in Atlanta?
It doesn't matter. You can draw your overlay district boundary any way you want.
Yeah.
But can we create regulations related in that overlay district, even though that overlay district is now covering areas that residential properties can be built in? At which point does the state law allow us through the overlay process to regulate aesthetic?
Let me ask a couple of questions. In this hypothetical, I call it an ROD. Is that right, ROD? I'm thinking of something else.
What is it? Yeah, what's RRD?
Riverwalk Overlay District. Because we just did it last night. In this hypothetical overlay district that we're talking about tonight, if you drew a line around where you want that to be, are there any, not uses, are there any current residential uses in that hypothetical district?
Yeah. I'd say 90% of it will be.
You're going to go all the way up to N Avenue?
But what, you can draw the line where you want.
No.
Why would you draw the line where residential exists?
Well, that was going to be my next question. If you want to do more overlay district, what are you ultimately trying to accomplish there?
I mean, I thought the whole thing was the central business district.
Well, I think what he's, since they built that big house in Atlantic, and next to we have two hotels down Atlantic, or three?
There's one large hotel there that occupies nine lots.
And then there's the Darlington at the end.
That's not in the B1 district.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Okay. So there's only one other.
There's several hotels in the central business district, yes.
I mean, maybe my understanding is incorrect. I thought there was a goal of protecting what's now the central business district. Are there any residential uses currently in the central business district?
Yes.
There is a residential use in there.
13 of them.
I'm really into bifurcating things tonight. So it seems to me there's two issues. One is we have the central business district and the zoning there, and trying to come up with some ideas to enhance, as the mayor would like to enhance, and the existing situation there. That's got a separate set of problems because there's residential units in that particular district.
Yeah, I didn't realize there were residential units.
In addition, the mayor seemed to be, and this is the second issue, the mayor seemed to be interested in the adjacent zoning districts where there are currently commercial properties. You know, some of the hotels, for example. And if I remember from his email, he said, well, as those people retire, if some of these are on multiple lots that could be torn down and then built into nine different residential. So he's concerned about maintaining that
and
continuity
those,
in the...
Those commercial buildings are not... Are they adjacent to each other? And are they adjacent to the CBD?
Yes.
No.
Are they adjacent to the CBD as well?
I believe so.
No. I mean, I'm asking, as
you go down Fort Fisher, going south on Fort Fisher... So some of those hotels are not in the central business district, but they're adjacent to the central business district and kind of create a continuity there, don't they?
That's what I'm getting at. Are they adjacent to each other as well?
They're all part of the B1 district.
So there's nothing further than the B1 district that would be commercial right now?
Well, there is commercial.
They're Darlington.
But it's also zoned for residential and commercial.
Right. So when we were talking about an overlay, there's no reason to do an overlay in our B1 district. So when we were talking about overlays through the email process, what I thought we were referring to is on those adjacent zoning districts that we wanted to have some control over to keep that continuity of business and that sort of thing.
I think you'd make everything in there non-conforming if you did that. Every single thing. But if you're trying to protect the CBD, why can't you just make the CBD, put an overlay on top of the CBD and make any future uses after the effective date subject to a special use permit? That protects everything you want about the CBD.
I would agree. Okay, can you, under current state law, as part of a special use permit, or the SUP, incorporate aesthetic characteristics?
Only for commercial.
Right, for commercial. But we can't do it. So if we were to recommend as a commission that there be a study done as to what Curie Beach wants this central business district to look like, aesthetically, you know, that sort of thing, then we could then incorporate those recommendations into a overlay district just on the CBD and enforce it through the special use permit
process. Let me give you two examples that, totally. Let me give you two examples why my answer is yes. Belleville has a waterfront district that is subject to a development agreement, and we've made that into a downtown overlay district. Okay. When we first set that up in 2000, and it's along the lines of Mayfair, mixed use residential, commercial. When that concept was codified in 2007, single and double family residential units were part of that. And that whole overlay district provision for Belleville is nothing but architectural detail. So when they passed the prohibition, we had to go in and text amend that article and just put a simple sentence in there that single family, no, there weren't any single family or double family, but to guard against that, we put a provision in there that they would not be subject to the architectural detail requirements. So that's part of it. Last night, well, a couple years ago, Belleville acquired some property. They did a real nice river walk and nature trail type thing. And now they're going to put in, there's five parcels. They're going to subdivide two big parcels into five, and they're going to make two of those commercial pads for a restaurant and a Raptor Center. So in order to control that those are the uses that will develop, they're contemplating in draft form at the present time provisions which make that those two parcels into a overlay district. It provides the architectural detail, and it references other parts of the zoning ordinance, and it makes it all subject to special use permit approval. So yeah, absolutely.
To me, I mean, if we do anything, it would have to be driven by some sort of a plan or a study that's been put in place, I assume has been what's been done in Belleville.
Exactly, I'm glad you said that, because it's easy for me to say, yes, we can do that, but because of the very nature of the goal that you're trying to meet, which is protect it, preserve it, control it.
And enhance it.
I need input in order to draft it accordingly. Now, what Belleville did was they had a district committee, overlay district committee, that met three or four times, and they hammered out what they wanted, and then they brought me that, and we could plug that into the draft.
Did they hire, because, you know, my experience in doing these type of things is that there are professionals who come out. In fact, we even had a study that was done about 5 years ago.
We did a
two studies.
We did a charrette a long time ago to give a vision of the town, including right. that redevelopment, but we didn't need that to carve out these two, to carve out, which is would be the case of Curie Beach as well, a very finite overlay district that you know what you want, but somebody's got to articulate it so we can plug it into the text of it.
Well, particularly the architectural elements there, because the ones that I have seen is, and I think Southport's done something very, very similar. That you know, you carve out the overlay, but then when you say the architectural components in terms of creating continuity, the look, you know, the colors, you know, all sort of things like that, that's beyond my skills and really beyond the P&Z skills. I mean, that really has to be based upon having done a study and gotten commitment from the town council that this is what they really want the future to look like. And you're right. I mean, we've done this a couple times, and they just have sat on the shelf.
I will say, you're right, I will say that the Belleville's committee did have the benefit of, Belleville doesn't have a planner, we have a planning consultant who's an engineer, and he was experienced enough that he assisted the committee in coming up with the finer details.
Can I ask, I mean, that's a big thing we would be biting off. What is... What's the feeling of the town council versus just the mayor?
I'll bring it up. We want to protect what's there. I think it's the best thing for the viability of the town. We don't want to 18 townhomes.
And it's the finer details that would be a challenge in this case because, for example, in Belleville, we just went with low country architecture. We could specify that, but as I recall, that central business district gets a little bit of everything. You know, you've got the pier, you've got Jack Max, you got whatever else you got. So I don't know. See, I don't know if you can make it uniform or keep it the beach variety, so to speak. So that would be a challenge.
And then maybe even address looking at the height down there.
Well, that's what the studies are going to indicate immediately.
Yeah, that's got to be.
We got to raise it, and I'm not sure if that would go over very well.
It won't.
But you can certainly do a lot architecturally to preserve and enhance what's down there, particularly as property can, and it will. I mean, there's going to be more pressure to redevelop that stuff down there over time.
So. I think the concept of an overlay district and a special use permit will sufficiently protect the interest, but the challenge is, provisions for architectural detail. That's the challenge.
I thought the town has a organization that's looking at marketing and advertising. Is there any
committee?
Is there any offshoot of that that could help this? Or that's apples and oranges. That's apples and oranges.
No, I think Chairman raises a good point. If the lay people are trying to do it, they're going to
screw it up.
Well, not necessarily screw it up, but they're going to have a hard time progressing.
So we need a motion to...
I'm not sure if we need a motion for this, but I, you know, before we bite off really talking about that and getting into it, I would like to hear probably a formal motion or something like that on the town council that they would want us to do this. Okay. I mean, this is a huge thing, and it's going to be very, very controversial, too. You're going to have people over here disagreeing with what we're trying to do. So that, you know, the support of the town council would be pretty important, I think, for us to bite this one off.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of making... We don't need to make a motion to
just request approval from the council.
To have them to say we would like the town.
I mean, if somebody wants to make a motion, I'll make a motion that we ask the town council to provide direction related to P&Z's involvement to assist in preserving the central business district.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right, member items.
I'm good.
Okay. Next meeting, actually, we're going to have a special meeting. We agreed on the 18th. That's already been in motion. Or do it? Actually, did we make a motion for the 18th?
Yes.
We did. Okay. And then, obviously, we have a regular meeting on July 4th, which would need to be rescheduled. Do we want to? Somebody want to propose another date for our July meeting, or?
Are we going to have to, do you think, do anything after the 19th?
If the town council comes back on that thing that we just talked about, I think we're going to probably start to initiate that discussion.
Yeah, typically, historically, we've always skipped the July meeting. So
it may be be prudent to provide for it and to cancel it.
And then cancel it.
Yeah.
And just a reminder, I am out of state for July and August, and that was in my original application to be on the board.
Okay. Yes, yes. And I may need to reschedule to August. I think I'm going to be in Indiana.
What part of Indiana? I like Indiana.
About an hour and a half south of Indianapolis.
Yeah.
You want to tentatively?
Purdue.
So I'm understanding that we don't have anything yet because the meeting won't be confirmed.
Either. What days work for you in July, guys?
11th. I was going to say just tentatively make it the week.
Let's do 11th and then we can cancel
we
if we
can
don't.
We can cancel it, yeah.
We can cancel okay. it. So.
If we don't need to do it.
Someone want to make a motion?
Because you're canceling
I make a motion
meeting.
That we.
Because you're canceling a regular meeting, that July 11th meeting actually ends up being a special meeting.
We've already just rescheduled regular
well,
meetings.
Yeah,
without
they're not canceling it. They're just rescheduling.
We're just rescheduling.
We'll cancel it if council does
okay,
not
that's fine.
Do anything.
We don't need it, so. Yeah.
But we need to make a motion to reschedule
it. Yeah, make a motion that we reschedule the July meeting from the 4th to the 11th.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Motion.
No. Okay.
Second.
Say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Longest meeting we've had in a while.
Yeah. Introduction to zoning and development regulations.
Charlie Allen, one of those
things.
Okay, I noticed it was the only on my in front of me, so
yeah,
I was going to say, is it a suggestion I'm doing anything wrong?
Got up.
So, got to start studying this stuff.
No, I'm good.
I can wait for you.
No, I'm good.
I need to sign the.